Welcome to the Dream Job System, the only podcast that provides proven, tangible strategies to help you land a job you love without traditional experience and without applying online. Get ready to level up your job search with your host, Austin Belsack.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Dream Job System podcast. I'm your host, Austin Belsack, and today we are back with our Ask Austin Anything episode for June. I'm super pumped. We have six awesome questions coming our way, covering everything from my favorite pizza spot in New York to starting from scratch on LinkedIn and so much more. So it's going to be an awesome episode. I'm super excited. But if you want me to answer your question directly, we do these every single month. So just shoot me a text or shoot me an email. My phone number and my email are both in the show notes below. Let me know it's for the Ask Me Anything episode and just ask your question. And then we'll choose a couple of those and we include them in this episode every single month. So with that said, and without further ado, let's get into it. Our first question comes from Brian, and Brian is asking about starting from scratch on LinkedIn in 2021. He asks, if I were to start this year, is there anything I would do differently to build and engage with my audience here? Where would I start? So there are two things that I would do, and they're kind of solving two different things. So first and foremost, you're not going to be successful on any platform if you don't know who your audience is, if you don't know what they look like, what they care about, what pain points they have, and the language that they want to use or have spoken to them in order to hear more about this topic. So when I started Cultivated Culture, I personally said yes to every pick your brain ask. And I know that most of us don't want to do that. I know that that seems like kind of a pain in the ass, but truthfully, the only way you're going to learn who your audience is and what they want and how to help them is by talking to them. And the toughest part about this is you're going to spend a lot of time on calls with people who aren't in your audience, but learning who's not in your audience and why is equally as important as figuring out what makes somebody a part of your core demographic. So what I would do is I would get on these calls and I would just listen to these people. And I would also try to tease out first, you know, who are they? You know, how old are they? Are they a new grad? Are they, you know, a senior CEO, you know, with 20, 30 years of experience? Where are they from? Are they from, you know, different parts of the US? Are they from outside the US? Where are they now in their career in terms of their job and their role in the company they work at? Where are they looking to go? What challenges are they facing? What big questions do they have? What's the most frustrating thing and what gets them excited? I would ask all of these questions and I would listen to the responses. And just to give an example, this is where that piece of without applying online came into my whole value prop. Initially, I was just, you know, out here teaching people how to get jobs. I'll help you get a job. And after having enough conversations with these people, the number one most common pain point or thing that people spoke about was frustration with online apps. So I immediately took that and I added it into my tagline. And now we help people land jobs without applying online. So that came directly from the feedback in these calls, as did a lot of the language I use in my writing and my LinkedIn posts and when we're recording here on the podcast. So you need to know who your audience is. And the only way to do that is to actually get out there and engage with them. Now, you can scale this up a little bit by, you know, posting content, commenting on things, engaging with people virtually. But I do find that actually getting on the phone with folks is really the best way to learn about them. And you don't have to have hundreds and hundreds of these calls. You can start with, you know, 5, 10, whatever makes sense for you. But that's going to help you so much more than zero. So that's the first thing, understanding who your audience is, what they look like from a demographic standpoint, what kind of language they use to describe their problems, and also what problems that they have. So that's the first thing that I would do. And then the second thing that I would do in terms of getting started is I would heavily over-index on comments. In fact, if I were getting started today, I would probably spend a month or 2 months literally just commenting on other people's posts, but not just anybody. So we'll get to that in a sec. But why comments? Well, comments are awesome because they help you find your voice and they help you understand how what you've learned in those conversations we talked about translates to content. So a lot of people just start putting out posts, but first they don't have an audience. So only a few people are seeing those posts and those people don't really know this person as a content creator yet. And then second, on top of that, they don't really know what's going to be a hit in terms of their content. So when we start by commenting, that's sort of an easy way for us to find our voice, to test out our content, and to understand, you know, how we're engaging with people, how stuff is landing. So let me give you an example of that. If I were to go find, you know, let's say that I wanted to start speaking about the B2B SaaS space and specifically sales, you know, that's my niche that I want to talk about. Well, if I go find a couple of people who have pretty large, pretty sizable followings in that space, I can start commenting on their posts. And what I'm going to see is my comments will get reactions or they won't, right? And so through that feedback, I'm almost treating it like a mini post where I say, okay, here's an influential person who's going to get a lot of views on this post. Let me leverage those views to see what people like and what they don't like. Let me test out different voices and writing styles and different topics. And then you can actually use the reactions and the replies to your comment to get a sense for the voice that you want to use and the topics you want to focus on and how to specifically speak about those topics. So that's why comments are amazing. They're also amazing because they're a great way to, for you to start building your audience. So if you show up and you use something that I call a value-driven comment, which is basically where you tag the creator, you support what they're saying, you restate a little bit of their post, and then you add your own piece of value, whether it's your own experience or whether it's, you know, X steps to do, you know, this thing or achieve this thing, you add some value. People are going to see that comment. They're going to say, whoa, this is valuable. You know, who is this person? They're going to click on your profile and potentially give you a follow. So if you spend a couple of months leaving comments first, one, you're going to find your voice and you're going to figure out what type of content and how to write it and how that works best for your audience. Two, you're going to start to build an audience because people are going to get to know you from your comments. And then three, the bonus is that you're actually going to start building relationships with the influencers or, you know, the thought leaders whose posts you're commenting on if you consistently show up. So that's probably where I would start. And then after a month or two of doing that, once I feel much better about, you know, hey, these types of comments really resonate with people. And when I write them this way, that really resonates too. Now you can start creating your own content. And you also know that when you put it out there, you already have some followers who have seen your previous comments and they're ready to engage with your posts. So you don't start dead in the water. So that's probably where I'd start if I had to start from scratch today. Awesome question, Brian. I love it. Now, we'll jump into the next one from Susan, and she's asking, what was your first job? So I had a pretty interesting trajectory, and I had a job from a very, very early age. My parents would make me call up different shops in town and ask them if they were hiring for the summer and get in the door there. So my first ever job was actually teaching tennis lessons for the city of Atlanta, which was an interesting experience because working for the government really is very different than working for a private company. And I've only worked at one government job, which was teaching tennis lessons for the city of Atlanta. But it was really interesting to go through that process. So I did that for one summer. And then later on, I worked folding towels at a country club by the pool. I worked at Staples for a summer. I also worked at a place called Fresh Market, which is basically like a competitor to Whole Foods, but in the southeast of the US. And I had all those jobs before I ended up getting my first job. So by the time I got my first job, I had really worked in a bunch of different settings. And I do think that working in retail in some capacity gives you a lot of skills for success later on, because you have to deal with a lot of people, and many of them are not the happiest people or the friendliest people, but you still have to understand how to engage with them. And you're just out there, right? So I really learned a lot from those experiences. They were really humbling and they gave me a ton of lessons that I took into the real world that I think didn't necessarily benefit me in my first job, but benefited me in the jobs that I had down the road and also during the job search as well. So it's fun to kind of reminisce about that stuff. First jobs are always a great question. Susan, I appreciate you asking. Darren has our next question here, and he's asking, is it better to build a personal brand around yourself or around a specific area or job? So I always think the best thing you can do is build the personal brand around you. Now, that personal brand could be related to a specific field or a specific area, and that's fine. Where I would get careful is building your brand around your company. So if your entire brand revolves around working at your specific company, whether that's a startup or whether that's, you know, Microsoft or Google or any of these larger companies, that's where things get dicey, because all of this work that you're putting in, all this effort, all this time, all this sweat, equity, and emotion is still tied up with the company's brand. So if you're let go from that company or if you move on to another job, all of that work is basically gone, or it's going to be really, really hard to salvage and move forward. Whereas if you build the brand around yourself, and then by extension, you're helping your company, that's a big win because your personal brand is yours and nobody can take that away from you. So if you get laid off, you still have your personal brand and you can go use that to find another job or start your own thing. It's really the best form of job security that you can have. And what you'll find is that there will always be opportunities out there when you start creating your personal brand and putting content out there and putting your thoughts out there. There are going to be people asking you to come on as a consultant. There are going to be people asking to hire you. There are going to be people asking if you coach. There are going to be people asking you for your expertise in many different ways. So time and again, the people who have solid personal brands online that are built around themselves, they are never struggling for offers. They are never struggling for opportunities. And in fact, they tend to end up in really awesome situations because they have the flexibility and they have the runway to pick an opportunity that they're excited about versus just settling for the first one that comes in the door like most job seekers do. So I would definitely say that you want to build the personal brand around yourself. Now, one thing that people come back to me on that with is, well, what if my company is wary about, you know, they're looking at my online presence, or what if they see this stuff, blah, blah, blah. What I would do is I would sit down and think about how you building a brand can help the company that you're in. So will it get them more visibility? Could you talk a little bit about them in your post? Not necessarily associating everything about them with you and vice versa, but if you are writing a post where you're sharing a lesson learned or whatever, maybe you mention them in a positive way in that post as an example, and that way they're getting positive PR, positive visibility, right? So there's so many ways that your company can benefit from you having an awesome personal brand. That's the way that I would sell it into them, and they should be on board with that. So I think building a personal brand is, again, one of the best forms of job security that you can have. It requires work, but it is totally, totally worth it. You just want to make sure that the brand is truly personal and not tied to another specific company. Anil has our next question, and it's a fun one. Where's your favorite place to get pizza in New York? He said he's asking for when he visits. So it depends on how far you're willing to travel, because the best pizza in New York, in my opinion, is a place called Roberta's in Brooklyn. It's out in Bushwick. It's a little bit of a hike. It's about a 30 to 40 minute subway ride outside the city, but it's 100% worth it. They have amazing, amazing pizzas. They also have an amazing venue, and they usually have a pretty good tap list as well. So they have an indoor part with picnic tables that tends to get pretty busy, but then they have an awesome outdoor setup and they have a bar outside as well. So if you go, my number one recommendation is to get the Bee Sting. It's not always on the menu, but the Bee Sting is essentially like a Neapolitan pie with sopressata, and then they drizzle some hot honey and chili oil on there. And it's super delicious, but y'all know I like the spicy stuff. So that is my absolute favorite spot. But if you want to keep it local, if you're just in Manhattan, it's hard to beat Joe's Pizza. There's one in the West Village and there's one up on Broadway near Times Square as well. Joe's is fantastic. There's usually like a line around the block. Even for Roberta's, you're waiting for a while. But if you have the luxury of time and you're willing to travel a little bit, I would definitely go to Roberta's. Otherwise, Joe's is the move, I think, even though I think that's a bit of a cliched answer. So Anil, I hope you get to visit one of those on your trip, but thanks for asking. Our next question comes from Janice. So Janice asks, if you could only offer one tip for somebody transitioning into tech with no work experience to help them land an interview, what would that tip be? I think the best tip that I can give is just the knowledge that companies don't care about the fact that you have the information. They want to know that you can do something with the information. So what do I mean by that? Well, I see so many job seekers want to change industries. So they go take a course, so they get a certification, or they read a book, and then they just start applying. And they're like, yeah, I got this certification. I'm ready to apply. And the truth is, these certifications, you know, these courses, especially post-grad, there's no metric of basically ability, right? Whereas in school, you took a course and you got an A or you got an F or anything in between. And if you got an A, people are like, oh, this person's really good at that subject. And if you got an F, they're like, they're not so good at this subject. That doesn't really apply in the real world. It's really pass fail. So the problem is, if you just show up and say, hey, I took this certification, one, the person on the other end, they don't know how well you're going to be able to do the job from that certification. And more often than not, they're going to view that as just, you know, learning, right? You haven't actually gotten your hands dirty. You haven't actually done the job. So companies care less about you getting the knowledge. They care more about what you can do with that knowledge. So in order to successfully make this transition, it's so important, yes, to go get that knowledge, to take the courses, to read the books, to do all that. But then you have to find a way to go get real world experience from that knowledge. You have to find a way to apply it to the real world. So for me personally, I did this through freelancing. So I took a ton of marketing courses, digital marketing courses. I read a ton of digital marketing books. I was on a ton of these newsletters. And initially, I started just messing around with some of these platforms myself, like Google Ads, Google Analytics. And then I started freelancing my services. So I started reaching out to small businesses, and I started, you know, for free initially to get some case studies. Then I started upping my prices. And basically what that allowed me to do was learn without much pressure and with real businesses. So initially I would say, you know, hey, I'll do this for free. I'm looking to get experience. And I would go find businesses who would see the value in it, but didn't really have the budget to pay, you know, somebody who was actually an expert in the field, right? So I was able to build experience, and I was also able to initially get those case studies for free, but then actually get paid to do it. So there's so many ways to go out and do this. You know, if you want to become a software engineer, just start building things and start coding things, right? If you want to become a user experience designer, like go find your favorite brands or your target companies and perform a user experience analysis on their app, on their website, right? If you want to be in, let's say, film production, like go out and start producing some films. The more you can get real world experience in the field, the easier it's going to be to make the transition, because companies truly, they don't mind taking a chance on a non-traditional candidate, but what they want to know is that the non-traditional candidate is actually going to be able to do the job. And so many people fall short on that because they only go get the knowledge and they just expect, you know, because, hey, I sat down for this course for 2 weeks, or because I got the certification or read this book, all of a sudden now I'm qualified. And that's not necessarily the case, especially when you consider the fact that you're competing against people who probably have actual experience in the space, right? So you can't stop at just getting the knowledge. You actually have to go turn that knowledge into real world results. But that's an awesome question, Janice. Thank you so much for asking. And then last but not least, we have a question from Jagoda. She's asking, what are the things to watch out for in job postings that would indicate the workplace slash management can be toxic and therefore you should avoid them? So I love this question because one of the last things you want to do is end up in a toxic job or a toxic work environment. So job descriptions can make it tricky. And that's mainly because job descriptions almost never match the actual job that you're doing day to day. And I think we've all seen that, right? On top of that, job descriptions tend to be wish lists. You know, they're asking for somebody who's, you know, an expert in sales, but can also code and is also good at accounting. And oh, by the way, you know, they understand string theory and all this stuff, right? And we're like, does this person even exist? So job descriptions can be kind of tough. So one thing I would look out for is the way that they speak about work-life balance. You know, if they're talking about looking for somebody who is, you know, really excited about buying into the mission and is willing to do whatever it takes and has a can-do attitude, not those words specifically, but basically if the sentiment is like, hey, we're looking for somebody super high energy who's going to, you know, blindly buy into this company philosophy, that's a bit of a red flag. Whereas if the company is talking about their culture and they're clearly addressing issues like, hey, we understand mental health is important and we want you to keep yours healthy, so we mandate that you take a day off, you know, every month, or we offer, you know, a stipend for, you know, signing up for a mental health app or whatever it is. If they're talking about stuff like that, you know, you probably can realize or deduce that that place is going to be, you know, more clued into their employees and it's probably going to be a better place to work than the people who are like, you know, join a team of people who will do anything, whatever it takes, you know, any hour to get the job done because that's what winners do. Like that sort of talk is usually pretty toxic. But if you really want to find out if a place is toxic, you can't just rely on the job description. You got to go deeper. So one of my favorite things to do is to actually go find employees who left for a better opportunity. And it's important that they left for a better opportunity because typically, you know, if somebody was working at, let's say, like a mid-tier startup and then they got a job at Google, they're probably happy with that transition. And so they're going to be less biased. They're going to hold, you know, less emotion, animosity, or potential animosity to this previous company. Whereas if somebody left for a worse role or they made a lateral move, we don't know why they did that. We don't know if they were pushed out or if there's something weird going on or whatever. And we don't want that emotion to cloud things, right? We want an unbiased opinion. If things were toxic, we want to know that, but we don't want somebody to just say they were toxic because they personally had a bad experience. That's not necessarily an indication of the company as a whole. So I would go try to find those people. You can find them on LinkedIn where you use the past company filter and put in your target company, and then you use the future company filter, or you don't even have to use the future company filter. I think past will get the job done for you. And then you should have a list of people and just try to find people who are working in your target role, the one you'd be hired into, and just reach out to them and just say, hey, I'm interested in working here. The culture seems awesome, but I'd love to just learn a little bit more about what it's truly like to work at this company for a couple of years. You know, I saw you were there for 3 years in this specific role. Would you mind if I just ask you a few questions here over email or over the phone? And that should get the job done for you. So that is it for our Ask Austin Anything episode for the month of June. I appreciate you all listening as always. I really do. I know that I say that at the end of many episodes, but it does mean a lot to me that you all show up and listen to this podcast. And I hope that the value from these episodes is helping you in the real world. I hope you're learning stuff that's causing you to kind of question how you were doing things, or maybe you're getting some light bulb moments. But either way, I do appreciate you showing up. I really mean that. And thank you. We will see you on the next episode of the podcast.